Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. As always, thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. On today's program, we've got Culture Couch, County Lines, Dayton Youth Radio, and a whole lot more. So let's get to it. A new series began this week on WISO called Reentry Stories, conversations between people who were once in prison. When they return to the community, they often have trouble finding jobs, housing, education, and mental health services. Every year in Ohio, more than 22,000 people are released from prison, 1,500 in Montgomery County alone. Reentry Stories is produced by Mary Evans, who was incarcerated at Dayton Correctional, where she took part in Sinclair Community College's Advanced Job Training Program, designed to prepare people for reentry. Once released, she enrolled at Antioch College and also got involved with the X Factor Initiative, part of the Dayton Collaboratory, which helps reentering citizens get jobs and life skills and helps them find peer mentors. All of the people in our series have taken part in either the Sinclair Prison Training Project or the X Factor Initiative. This week, we met Sharika Gibson, who went through the Sinclair program, and Marcia Weber, part of the X Factor Initiative. Both of them had professional careers and families before they were incarcerated, and now they want to reclaim some of their old lives.
Well, just describe a little bit about your life before incarceration.
I was a career mom. I was a psychologist. I had a full-time job. I worked and pretty much I came home. What about you? What was your life like before?
I could probably quote you and then it would be exactly the same. I was definitely a career mom. I was a high school science teacher. My children played basketball. And so I was a big basketball mom, recorded every single game. You mentioned that when you were released and you were driving to the halfway house that you were crying uncontrollably. Can you remember why?
So, you know, you're not supposed to cry in prison. It makes you vulnerable. And being vulnerable in prison is not necessarily good. So I think part of what happened on that day was this huge dump of emotion that I had been not really successfully holding in check, but trying to hold in check. And then also it was like one deep breath because then I was going back in where I was sort of halfway free, but not really.
I was so happy to get out. I was ready to go. And I knew I had all of these plans to go home to my husband, my children, my vehicle. All of the functional pieces were there. And being released, I knew they were there. What I didn't know was there was the grief that was waiting for me. I did seek help and I went to a psychologist and she told me that the reason that I was probably crying so much is because I was grieving for the life that I once had. That reentry feeling is real, isn't it? Everything you do, you question three times over. The person that I was before incarceration is different now. I was able to get a job that actually used my degree, being the math and science academic coordinator at Sinclair. And I definitely attribute that to having an education. That's one thing they cannot take from you. You take the license, but you can't take the education.
Certainly having an education brings with it a variety of skills. I am adept at various computer programs, not in terms of an IT person, but in terms of I could do data entry if that were all that was available to me. I could be a receptionist or a secretary or any of those things because I have those other skills that came along with my education. I got the job that I currently have because of my education. If you look at the database of all of the corollary consequences of having had a felony, many of those are related to licensure and certification and all of those things that are the next step after education. In a field such as mine, having the education only gets you so far. You have to have the license to go with it to be able to provide the services. Inside, it seems like the mantra is get them all an education, then they won't be felons anymore. And yet outside, that is inconsistent. And again, it's not that it's not possible. You and I both did get connected to something that was more professional. It is more difficult and there are more barriers. And so there's that internal inconsistency within the system that I don't think people see.
I just hope that we can start to have more people in our network, such as judges and probation officers and our neighbors that feel like they don't know a felon when actually they do, that we can just have more people to understand how difficult it is and to remember to see us. I see you, Marcia.
And I feel that you do. I appreciate that. And I see you.
That was Returned Citizens, Marcia Weber and Sharika Gibson. This series is produced by Mary Evans, a collaboration between WYSO, Sinclair Community College, and Dayton Collaboratory. Funding support comes from Sinclair and the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices. To hear an extended version of this interview, subscribe to the Reentry Stories podcast at WYSO.org or on your favorite podcasting app. Well, today on Dayton Youth Radio, we'll hear a story from a teenager at Centerville High School about how sometimes a terrible day can end with the happiest memory.
I'm Morgan Risch. I'm currently 17 and a senior at Centerville High School. I'm going to tell you about my junior prom experience. I had waited for years, and last year I was finally a junior and was going to be able to go to prom. I had been looking forward to prom since I knew what prom was. The idea of getting dressed up and looking and feeling like a princess was a dream come true to me. My best friends, Annika, Annabelle, Danielle, and I got ready together the day of prom. Listening to music while getting ready at Annabelle's house was a great start to the day. I went and got my hair and makeup done at a salon. My makeup was a stunning darker brown eyeshadow look with glitter on my eyelid. And I was wearing my favorite lipstick, which is a rosy natural shade. I had a gorgeous royal blue dress. I had planned everything out for prom. I knew what time I would get to his house for pictures and dinner. Everything was going to be perfect. My boyfriend, Aries, at the time was my date. Aries has brown hair and eyes. He played guitar and skated sometimes. His style is grungy. Once I'd finished helping them get ready, I grabbed my dress and headed to his house. When I got there, Aries was very quiet and hardly talked to me at all. Within less than an hour, my parents showed up for pictures. My mom went outside and told him to talk to me, and he finally came into his room, which is when things turned sour. I was in my dress, completely ready for the night, when Aries walked in and told me he wanted to break up with me.
Why did you ignore me once I got there?
So you got there?
Yeah, once I got there, you ignored me.
I didn't
and hardly talk to me.
I started not talking to you. I went outside after we started fighting. And I remember we started fighting something because, no, you just didn't like my hair or my suit. And obviously that's two pretty minuscule things that I couldn't change. But that started to get carried into an actual fight.
Why couldn't you have waited until after prom to break up with me after a year and a half of us being together?
Prom day is obviously, like, the worst time to break up with you, especially beforehand. Yeah, but I'm pretty sure you remember that. I obviously don't like being an aggressor or talking, you know, mean to you. I don't hate you or anything. I was just done with how we were as a couple, obviously.
Yeah, me too. Kind of wish I would have ended it sooner, because looking back, there are a lot of red flags.
He told me he wanted to break up with me because he needed more time for friends and family. Feeling that from someone I had spent over a year with killed me inside a little bit. I almost immediately started bawling my eyes out. My tears very quickly ruined my makeup. I was telling my parents I didn't even want to go to prom anymore. My mom wanted me to go so that he couldn't ruin my night. She called my best friends, told them what happened, and told them to come get me. I hung up, got my dress and shoes on, took off my old makeup, and grabbed my makeup bag so I could get ready in the car. They all comforted me and told me I didn't need him and that I'd have fun without him. The group I ended up going with successfully made my prom night unforgettable. We danced to every song that came on and screamed every lyric until it hurt. By the end of the night, I was an exhausted, cold mess with sore feet. Being broken up with made me realize, like, some of my flaws as a person. And I've, like, changed myself and bettered myself. And like, I feel like I've just grown so much since it happened. There's a silver lining to everything. Bad things happen. Yeah, it sucks, but things are gonna get better, whether it be instant or it comes to you later. For Dayton Youth Radio at Centerville High School, this is Morgan Risch.
That's A Rose Is Still a Rose, written and produced by Morgan Risch, a senior at Centerville High School. Special thanks to Aries Kochendorfer and Trisha Raypock at Centerville. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
This story was created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO. I'm Jerry Kenney. You're listening to WISO Weekend. In November 1938, the Nazi leadership in Germany organized a series of violent actions against Jewish citizens all across the country. German soldiers attacked the homes, synagogues, and businesses of Jews, and more than 30,000 Jewish men were taken to concentration camps. Those attacks are known as Kristallnacht, the Night of Broken Glass, referring to the shattered glass on streets and sidewalks in the aftermath. It's often seen as the beginning of the Holocaust, the mass genocide of Jews and other minorities in Europe during World War II. Dayton resident Robert Kahn grew up in Germany and survived the Holocaust. Today he is 95 years old and shared his memories of Kristallnacht with Community Voices producer Leo DeLuca.
Robert Kahn says that by 1938, the Nazis had a tightening grip on his hometown of Mannheim, Germany. Jews lost the right to vote. They were banned from swimming pools and playgrounds. Jewish books were burned. One of the only joys left for 15-year-old Robert was practicing his violin at home. And then one afternoon, he saw synagogues burning, Torahs in the street, and Robert Kahn saw his boyhood home being invaded.
It seemed to me like it was Dante's Inferno. It seemed like the end of the world. When I arrived at the home, my father was on the ground being beaten up by the Nazi hoodlums, and he was screaming, I was unable to help him while the Nazis were beating him. My mother was locked up in one of our bedrooms, and I heard her cry, but I couldn't help her.
Robert was a burgeoning violinist at the time. The Nazis exploited his talent.
They just grabbed me with my violin and took me to the balcony, which was surrounded by hundreds of people enjoying themselves while everything was being burned. And the SS man that brought me to the balcony said, "Play."
Robert was forced to play what the Nazis called happy German songs.
Every time I finished playing one particular song, the SS man prodded me to play more. So that went on for some time, which may have been 20 minutes or longer, but it seemed like a lifetime to me.
He later hid his violin in the attic of the apartment.
We were separated, and I had no idea where my father was going or what was happening to him. As a matter of fact, it took several days before I found out that my father was taken to Dachau concentration camp.
Dachau, the first widely used Nazi concentration camp, was where more than 188,000 prisoners were incarcerated and upwards of 30,000 people killed.
I found out during the years of persecution and my escape that in spite of the fact that all of the synagogues were destroyed, I found that you could pray without being in a synagogue, that you could pray anytime, anywhere. Prayer was probably the only thing that kept me from giving up.
Years later, Robert wrote to the janitor at his family's old Mannheim apartment asking him to check the attic for his violin. He was reunited with the instrument, though he never played it again. It is now displayed at the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force. Robert Kahn thought one day, maybe, people would stop asking about his life. But they never have.
The beauty is that from really nothing, I now have a wonderful family, a wonderful wife, children, grandchildren, and several great-grandchildren out of a complete chaos. I've been able to reconstruct a life that has meaning and has sustained me through 95 years. And I thank God Almighty for giving me this opportunity to be alive.
For WYSO, I'm Community Voices producer Leo DeLuca.
Culture Couch is made possible by a generous grant from the Ohio Arts Council. This story was created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. Audiobook publishing has exploded in the last several years. More than half of all Americans over the age of 12 say they have listened to an audiobook, and there are nearly 50,000 audiobooks to choose from. Every one of those audiobooks is read out loud and recorded, sometimes by the author, but oftentimes by a professional actor like Yellow Springs resident Terry Clark Linden. Community Voices producer Deborah Oswald wanted to know what it's like to do that for a living, and went to visit Terry Clark Linden at her home.
Terry Clark Linden has been narrating audiobooks for the past 10 years. She's done about 200 of them in that time.
When I started, it was going on site for producers and being directed by them in a studio with an engineer running the equipment. And there are many narrators now that have no idea what that experience is. They do everything from a home studio. It used to just be narrated by. It would be just like you're reading a story like you would to your children. And now it's more performance-based.
She thinks she has improved over the years, and she really doesn't like to hear her old work. Here's one from 2013 called The Witches of Wenshar by Barbara Hambly.
Kalitha waved her silent. You barbarian pig! She had a voice like the clink of a dropped gold coin upon stone. Are you slandering me out of fear of what I am, or jealousy of what I have?
And I just sound so stilted. It just doesn't sound smooth, and I really wish I could go back and record some of that stuff again, because I think I continue to try to get better.
Lately, Linden's been happy with her work.
I feel more comfortable. I feel more settled. I trust. A lot of it's confidence. You know, I trust myself what I'm doing more.
She's paid attention to the way people talk since she was a kid, and she's absorbed it.
I remember when we lived in Michigan and we would come down to Vandalia to see my grandparents, and we had these neighbors next door, and they would see me and they would say, "Oh, Terry, you've grown. Let's go to the Stop and Go and get us a Coke and an Icy," like we're in the South or something, right?
She's fascinated by pronunciation, rhythm, and pitch. She uses these qualities to create voices for her characters.
Because I have a lot of kind of standard library of voices anyway. California, you know, upspeak, like with a question mark at the end. Or New York, and you got that real kind of forward in the face, you know, that way of talking like this. You got the Southern, the little Virginia, the genteel Southern coming out. Or the hard R, if it's a more rural South.
But when I ask her about her own voice, she isn't sure which one I mean.
So, like, my voice, the way I'm speaking to you now, is probably more on the professional sounding, because I, you know, we're on radio and I'm I think that I can do it. My everyday voice is probably more like this. So it's probably more registered. It's more up. It's not placed in my chest as much. And then I'll have, because we've been back in Ohio, so I'll have like that Ohio kind of the O's come out a little more.
She works at home now. No more traveling to work with producers and engineers. and she's experienced enough to direct herself. Her home recording studio is tiny, only 6 by 8 feet. She calls it her personal time machine.
It's tight in here, isn't it?
You're going to have enough room to sit?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry, I can't offer you any space.
I'm going to squeeze in here and pretend I'm invisible.
Okay, so this is a little excerpt from The Sisters Hemingway by Annie England Noblin.
And then the magic happens. She begins to narrate, and I'm with her in the middle of a book.
Hadley watched her sisters leave, wishing more than anything she could go with them. She turned around to face her husband. "Why are you here, Mark? You need to come home with me," he said, "now."
Terry Clark Lyndon loves performing, whether it's on local stages or in the recording booth in her home office in Yellow Springs. And everything she's learned over the years, she brings to the microphone.
I do think, like, number one, with any performance medium, and certainly with audiobooks, you have to have a talent for it. But that's not necessarily enough. There's a training to it. I think it comes from doing and getting feedback and having the experiences of doing it and getting that feedback.
Audiobooks are a booming business, and Terry Clark Lyndon enjoys being part of it. For WYSO Community Voices, I'm Deborah Oswald.
Culture Couch is also made possible by a generous grant from the Ohio Arts Council. This story was created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. And today on County Lines, we meet a Southwest Ohio grower who is part of the so-called slow flower movement. Nellie Ashmore grew up on her parents' farm in Clinton County called That Guy's Family Farm, where they grew produce and flowers. As time went by, Nellie took over the flower growing and created her own business called That Girl's Flowers. County Lines producer Renee Wild went to see the operation for herself.
We're freezing. What are we doing out here?
I was getting flowers for my daughter's anniversary.
Jackie Hampton has pulled up to a small self-serve farm stand. Here, you can buy fresh seasonal produce like peppers, tomatoes, and squash from That Guy's Farm, and floral bouquets from That Girl's Flowers.
Well, actually, this is the first time. Yeah, I've always bought their produce.
What made you think to come here?
Because they have beautiful flowers.
So they do have beautiful flowers.
Yeah, they do. You don't see this kind in the stores.
7 years ago, a book called Slow Flowers was published, and a movement began. The idea behind Slow Flowers is the same as the Slow Food movement, buying flowers that are locally sourced and in season. The Slow Flower website lists around 400 slow growers in the United States, more than a dozen in Ohio, including That Girl's Flowers, owned by Nellie Ashmore. Nellie grows around 2 acres of flowers every year on her parents' farm in Blanchester, just north of Cincinnati.
What I'm most appreciative of is how much support that our farm has been given by the community around here is just really amazing.
80% of cut flowers in the U.S. come from South America, which means bouquets look the same. The slow flower movement has opened up an eager market for more unique flowers and creative bouquets that use seasonal flowers and local foliage.
It's really overwhelming how many people actually buy flowers and want to buy flowers and care that the flowers I grow are unique and fresh and one of a kind. In the spring, it just seems the colors are naturally more pastel, and so I have a lot of larkspur and nigella and bachelor's buttons. And then when you get into summer, things definitely get brighter and have more of a punch to them. When the fall comes, I kind of save the marigolds until the end because I think the orange color people just think of fall. And yeah, like the burgundy dahlias are more of a, you know, a September and October deal.
The dogs announce the arrival of Rosalie and Katie, New Yorkers who have come back to Ohio to get married tomorrow.
We Googled local flowers in Cincinnati, and I think That Girl's Flowers was the first thing that came up. Look for the local flowers, yeah, because we knew we liked flowers, but we needed to find a way to do it that
without a huge carbon footprint.
Exactly. Yeah.
These are beautiful.
These are
yes.
Your flowers right here.
Okay.
got Flocia, zinnias, dahlias, and then I kind of did a mixed bucket of some dahlias and zinnias and a different kind of Flocia. And then there is your foliage bucket. Okay. Oh, and this is some beauty berry. You can see the little berries on it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And this is nine bark. This is some autumn olive, viburnum, and more autumn olive.
It was so great to find a place like That Girl's Flowers in Cincinnati because we didn't know what was available, and this was exactly what we were looking for.
The three women carry bucket after bucket of colorful flowers out to the car. These are the last of Nellie's harvest. There's a frost warning tonight, and in the morning, the fields of flowers will have turned brown and died.
I mean, that was a great way to wrap up the season, is just kind of having a customer come and be very happy with their flowers and knowing that the last flowers are going to be for someone's wedding and very special.
Nellie will use the winter to plan what flowers she and her two employees will grow next year and order seeds for the spring. In addition to the customers who visit the farm, Nellie also supplies seasonal bouquets to Dorothy Lay Markets in the Dayton area and Pippin's Farm Market in Cincinnati. Nellie is also part of the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association and offers advice to others wanting to become slow flower growers. For County Lines on WYSO, Renee Weil, Clinton County.
County Lines is made possible by a grant from Ohio Humanities. This story was created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of late fall. The second week of the sleeping frog moon and the third week of the sun in Scorpio. An almanac horoscope suggests that the many seasons in the landscape of this time of year offer contrast and cheer to the darkening days. Early November marks the center of the season of second spring. Sweet Sicily, Virginia creeper, burdock, red clover, ground ivy, sweet rocket, dock, and leaf cup often revive, and they look ahead 6 months to middle spring. Deer mating season coincides with witch hazel blooming season and the season of red berries throughout parks, as dogwoods, hawthorns, bayberry, and flowering crabs reveal their color. Soon winter wheat greening season greens the fields, as bluebird migrating season and cricket song seasons close. At bird feeders, junco season adds juncos to the sparrows and cardinals. In the greenhouse, jade tree flowering season and aloe flowering season complement the gathering tide of Christmas cactus flowering season. Along the West Coast, the annual crab harvest season parallels early poinsettia season in the Midwest. Crawdad season starts in Louisiana with crawdads moving into flooded rice fields to feed. And the more seasons of late fall that you can follow, the greater your defenses against next month's early winter, and the easier it may be to hunker down by the fire away from seasonal affective disorder to enjoy the hermitage of the cold and the snow. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of late fall. In the meantime, look for the prophecies of second spring, the first promises of April to come that appear in the re-blooming weeds of November.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, building a more informed community with independent news and storytelling. I'm Jerry Kenney. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up now on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.